Susan.
Jordan.
How's your wine?
It's great.
You haven't had a drink in a little while, so yeah. Cheers.
Cheers.
Susan is here in Dallas. She comes once a month, and we work on the next edition of the Inner Circle, and we just do all things Inner Circle for almost a whole week every month. And this past week was my 31st birthday, and so Susan brought some gifts, including a new wine. How do you pronounce this? It's Unaname?
Yeah. Unami. Maybe it's a, is it French?
Unaname?
Unami.
It's Unanime Pinot Noir from Argentina, 2018. Really great. It's fantastic. It's a great Pinot Noir. Mm-hmm. If you like red wine, you like a good Pinot, this is fantastic.
I recommend it.
You got it from Total Wines,
Total
right?
Total Wine. Yeah. Absolutely.
Best store.
Yes.
So we're having some wine.
We're having some wine.
We just did a podcast on Susan's podcast. What's the name of your podcast? It's
the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast.
Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast. So we just recorded that. We had several glasses of wine, and then we're going to get a workout in after this podcast.
That's so that'd be interesting.
Good pre-workout nutrition, a lot of wine. Let's see. Oh, I should say my book is officially available for pre-order, which I'll put the link in the show notes if you would like to get it. It is called Eat It. I wrote it with one of my best friends and colleagues, Mike Vacanti. So the link to that book is in the show notes. It would mean the world to me if you would pre-order it. And if you don't want to order my book, you could get Susan's book. what's the name of your book, Susan?
Fit at Any Age, It's Never Too Late.
Fit at Any Age, It's Never Too Late. Susan has a wonderful book as well if you'd like to get that. So yeah, with that being said, every month when Susan comes here to do the Inner Circle, we do at least one podcast for each of our podcasts. We usually do a Q&A. Susan, can you just remind everyone where they can follow you if they don't already?
Sure. Susan Niebergall Fitness. It's N-I-E-B-E-R-G-A-L-L. And you can find me just about everywhere, but primarily Instagram. You'll find me over on YouTube. You will find my book, Fit at Any Age, It's Never Too Late, on Amazon, and the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast.
All right. I love it. Okay, so we're going to start off with a question. I get this question a lot, and I know you and I both have thoughts on this, but someone asked, is the BMI bullshit? So good question. There's there's a lot of emotion around the BMI.
There is.
What do you think? Is it bullshit? Is it not bullshit? What do you think?
No, it's not bullshit. I mean, it's there for a lot of good reasons. I think there's frustration with people who use BMI as another number that they're trying to chase. And ironically, it's people that don't have much weight to lose, right? They those are the ones that seem to be obsessed more with BMI.
That's
should
an
I follow
observation.
BMI? BMI is a general number used for some general purposes, for health reasons, for more than anything else. And I think, you know, if you go into your doctor's office and you see the little BMI chart, it's a general calculation, general standards for the general population. There are going to be people who would benefit from paying attention to that a little bit more than others. Those that might be severely obese, your life and your health can depend upon your BMI. And that is a number, yeah, that you definitely should be paying attention to. There are people that maybe need to lose 10 pounds or they want to lose 10 pounds, you know? And BMI, it's not that it's not important, but if you start becoming uber focused on that number, I think it's just going down this rabbit hole of trying to do these minuscule changes based on this general number, you know? And I think your example, because we talked about this in the Inner Circle today too, and I think your example that you gave them about your current weight and how you would be determined on that BMI scale, you know, is really eye-opening, because you said that you would be considered overweight.
Yes.
I, for a long time, was considered overweight. And I could very well right now be. I don't have any idea. I've never seen a BMI chart. But it can give you this false information that you are at this big risk now because you don't weigh 148, but you weigh 155 or
exactly,
whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's where you know, people think, well, is this really worth it or bullshit? And I just feel like there's certain people in the population that can benefit from paying attention to this,
yep.
that it's a better fit for,
yep.
for your health, your life, and that there are others that you might be just better off pay attention to what's on the scale.
Yeah.
You know, and go that direction.
Yeah. I mean, so the BMI, it stands for body mass index, and it's originally made for doctors as just like an easy way for doctors to be able to see if there are any potential issues with this individual. Is this individual at a greater risk than other individuals based on statistics? And what statistics show us of people with a higher, with a too high or a too low body mass index. That's it. It is not a diagnosis, and it is not an end-all be-all, which is where I think that's where it's weak. But where it's strong is in that on the either ends of the extreme, that we see very clear patterns that people with too high or too low of a BMI on the extreme ends of it are at significantly greater risk of negative health outcomes. There's no arguing that. It's not, again, you can't diagnose from it, and you can't automatically say someone is unhealthy because they have a high or low BMI, but it is a very good way for a doctor to be able to just look from the numbers and say, hey, this person might be at risk. Maybe not right now, but if they keep this up for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, they could be at real risk of negative health outcomes if they don't get this under control. And it could be because they have a too high BMI or a too low BMI. Mm-hmm. If you're under eating and you're way too low, then your BMI can be unhealthy. And for many, many reasons, if you're eating too little and you're underweight, it can be unhealthy. But generally speaking, one of the things that I see here is a lot of arguments people make is, well, you can still be healthy and really overweight. It's a very dangerous thing to say. The reality is someone might have okay health markers while they're overweight now, right? Maybe when they're 20, 30, 40, their health markers might be okay. But if they continue to stay at that weight or gain weight for 5, 10, 15 years, the effects of that are compounding over time. And one of the easiest practical ways to think about this is, and I spoke about this with you earlier, Susan, mm-hmm. is think about how many very old people do you see who are significantly overweight? Probably not that many, if mm-hmm. any at all. And there are so many reasons for that. But as you get older and the longer you stay with a higher body fat percentage, like too high of a body fat percentage where you're obese on the BMI, well, this starts to have real negative effects on your body, on your heart. It makes you more likely to have certain types of cancers, a lot of certain illnesses, a lot of the stress on your joints, your tendons, your ligaments. And you know what's actually interesting about this is it's not even necessarily just true of a certain body fat percentage, but also just size in general. And a lot of people don't recognize this, where if you have people, even people who have a ton of extra muscle, and we're looking, for example, you look at professional bodybuilders who have a ton of extra muscle, their lifespan is way shorter. And even though their body fat is super low, and that's an interesting thing about the BMI, this is something a lot of people don't discuss when they're trashing the BMI. They just think they're being like fat phobic. It's not just about body fat, it's about your size in general. Mm-hmm. And there's no question that the bigger you are, the more stress it places on the heart, and the more difficult it's going to be for your body to function from a cardiac perspective, from your heart, from your joints, your tendons, your ligaments. It puts you at a greater risk of different cancers and illnesses. So again, it's not about being fat phobic. It's about understanding that the bigger you are, the more stress your body is under.
Yeah,
that's all it is. And so there are pros and cons to it. There are some negatives to the BMI. There is no denying that, especially when people try and use it just as an end-all be-all diagnosis chart. But when you use it as a guideline to understand, if you are on either end of the extreme, you're putting your body at risk, period.
I just think that example you gave of how many old people do you see that are obese, that are on the one end of that chart? No. Just trying to think.
How many super overweight old people do you
know? Back when my mom was alive and she was in the nursing home, and you know, I never saw one.
Ever.
Not one.
Ever.
Yeah.
You know, and interestingly, and this is going to be a very unpopular opinion, and I'm not promoting under eating, but you do see a lot of very old, skinny people.
You do.
Too skinny.
Yeah, very much so.
But it goes to show you that your body does better being lighter than it does being heavier.
Yeah. Yeah,
it does. And it's not, has nothing to do with, I hate when people are like, you're fat phobic. I'm not fat phobic. What I'm saying facts.
You are saying facts. Facts
do not, it is irrelevant to how you feel about it. And I like most of my family is severely overweight. The vast majority of my family is severely overweight. It's not about being fat phobic. It's about making sure people understand the truth. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between being phobic towards something versus just simply educating knowledge wise and telling the truth about it, period.
Yep,
and if you get offended, like, that's your choice.
Sorry. Yeah.
That's your choice. I'm not even sorry. It's just your choice. Okay. This is a good question. How to track progress for a goal of being in overall better health, not just losing weight?
Wow.
This is a great question.
Yeah. And boy, you could go in so many different directions with that.
Yeah.
You know, it could be anything from, if we're talking from the nutrition side of things, maybe you want to improve the quality of the foods that you're eating. Maybe you have a salad every day.
Yep.
You know, that could be a goal. Maybe you weren't a big vegetable eater. Maybe it could be including vegetables at every meal or something like that. Maybe protein was your issue. So maybe it's increasing the amount of protein, you know, whatever. Things like that. I feel like those kind of nutrition goals are make the other stuff happen.
Yep.
You know, it'll make the other stuff happen. And on the training side of this, you know, you want to get a push-up. Okay, cool. You're going to work to get a push-up. You're going to do exercises and practice push-ups and progress them. And the way we recommend doing that is by elevating your hands and being able to go through that progression until you get a push-up. Maybe you want to get a chin-up. So you have a bunch of exercises you can do to get stronger at that are not chin-ups, but will transfer over to chin-up strength, and then practice assisted chin-ups with a band. You know, I mean, gosh, there's so many cool things you can do with that perspective.
Yeah. I love the mindset of it's not just about losing weight. It's about improving my health overall.
Right.
Because most people, they only look at progress from weight loss.
Yeah.
And weight loss can be progress, mm-hmm. and it is for many people a great form of progress, but also it's so helpful. One of the best things that I learned training at Westside under Louis, rest in peace, was every single day was an opportunity to hit a new personal record on a new lift. And that was sort of the conjugate periodization model that Louis developed, is you have a new lift every day that you can hit a new personal record on. And I loved that because every day was fun,
mm-hmm.
and every day was an opportunity to hit a new personal record. And it was it made training so much more enjoyable, so much more fun, so much more exciting. And it showed me that it's important to have so many different ways to achieve goals.
Mm.
Because when your only way to achieve your goal is solely through weight loss, then you become hyper-focused on it. But if weight loss and measurements and chin-ups and push-ups and mile time, and who is messaging me right now? I don't know what that noise is, but and mile time and flexibility, and you have all of these different types of goals intertwined. Well, now you have so many more ways to win. And when you have so many more ways to win, it becomes much more sustainable and enjoyable for you.
100%.
I would say, I think one of the first things, if overall health is a major goal, I would go get your blood work done.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go to the doctor, I'd get your blood work done. I'd get like all the numbers, get a full blood panel done. And I think that is the most objective way to really look at your health markers. You're looking at your cholesterol, you're looking at your ApoB, you're looking at your blood pressure, you're looking at like all of the markers of your overall blood health in order to get a really good idea of, all right, well, that's really, if you really want the most objective look, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Like, of your overall physical health. But then we can look at other markers of performance, and that's where we get into mile time, half mile time. We get into deadlift strength, push-up strength, chin-up strength, mobility, getting the splits. We like, there are so many things that you can keep track of in the gym, and I would say those are markers of performance, not necessarily health. But when you track your blood markers and your markers of performance, and then on top of that, what you said, where you start tracking your consistency with certain goals, like, am I getting more vegetables in? Am I getting my vegetables in at like 2 out of 3 meals a day? Am I hitting my protein intake? Am I hitting my calories? Well, now you can start track how consistent you're being and mark that as a win as well. And all of these combined, I think, is way better than only focusing on weight.
Amen to that. Amen to that. So much less stress involved with all of that too, and anxiety.
Yeah.
And, you know?
Yeah. because you don't put so much pressure on yourself to lose another pound. It's like, well, maybe my weight didn't go down, but I increased my deadlift by 15 pounds. So fucking let's go.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So I made a story sometime in the last few days, might've been yesterday. Someone asked me about resistance bands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that.
And they said, are resistance bands equally as beneficial as lifting weights? And I said something to the effect of, that's sort of like asking, is a saw and a hammer equally effective? And it's like, well, they're completely different tools.
Yeah.
And they're both very effective for their given job,
mm-hmm.
but they're not both effective for doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, someone asked, they said, well, what is a scenario in which resistance bands are the right equipment?
Hmm.
So when would you use resistance bands? When might they be beneficial for someone? And what would they be beneficial for?
Now, I think you can insert them into any program. You've done that for me before, too. There was one killer circuit I remember of doing band tricep pushdowns, band pull aparts, and band bicep curls. That's a killer.
Yeah.
And that's using a band.
Yep.
So I think there's a time and place. I think this has evolved over the past 2.5 years.
Yes.
From people working out at home.
Yes.
Right? So the people want the benefit of heavy weight lifting and access to the heavy weight like you do at a gym.
Yep.
They want all those benefits from doing it in their house, but without the heavy weight.
Correct.
People still want that.
Yep.
And you can't do it that way.
Correct.
If you want the benefits of going to the gym with heavy weight and all the choices of machinery, whatever, then you need to replicate that in your house. That's how you're going to get the equal benefit, yep. right? That being said, it doesn't mean that you can't benefit from dumbbells only or even using some resistance bands. Personally, you know, I'm using bands for chin-ups, obviously, for certain things in chin-ups. I do use them for mobility.
Yep.
Significantly.
Yeah.
Actually, for some hip stuff. And I love that. I feel like they are a super good use for that. You throw them in a circuit. I do what you tell me to do. So you throw them in a circuit. I like having those every now and again.
Yeah.
Would I want or expect that an entire workout of bands be the same thing as me trying to pick up 250 pounds off the ground? No.
Of course not. Yeah.
No, you know? So I feel like it's not a black and white scenario. Correct. Here, right?
Yeah.
It's a tool and there's a time and place for it. You know, put it in a workout. But if you think that you can get the same benefits from bands as you can lifting heavy weight, no, it's not the same thing.
I think you explained it perfectly. It's sort of like a barbell. We have all the weights in the world with the barbell, but I wouldn't only want to train with a barbell. Like I'd like to have dumbbells. I'd like to have bands. I'd like to have kettlebells. I'd like to have machines. I like bands and I like using them and you can get great benefits with them, but I wouldn't only want to use bands.
Yeah.
I also want dumbbells and barbells and machines and kettlebells and all that stuff. So bands can be great. Dumbbells can be great. Barbells can be great. But imagine if you got a toolkit and the only thing in the toolkit was a saw.
Yeah.
Well, this sucks. Like,
where's
my fucking hammer?
You need to hang some pictures.
Exactly. Or what if you got a toolkit and the only thing was a hammer?
Yeah.
You're like, well, it's a great tool, but I need more.
Yes.
And so I think you hit the nail on the head, pun intended, when you were talking about how it's over the last 2.5 years, especially where people are training at home.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're really looking for is they want the best bang for their buck equipment.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do everything with?
Yes.
It's like, well, you can't do everything with one thing.
Yeah.
You can't. You can get great benefits with bands. There's many, many, many ways to use them. For example, when I travel, I always bring bands.
I always do, too.
They're super easy to travel with.
Yep.
They're super lightweight. You can mold them in any shape you want.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very easy to fit into a carry-on. And I bring them everywhere. And it's a great way to get a quick workout in, an effective workout when you're traveling. When I'm here at the gym, I'll use them occasionally as well. I'll use them in every program, but like not for every exercise, but a couple of exercises.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 10 to 20% of exercises will include some type of a band. But it's not in everything. So they're great. They're a great tool to improve your strength. If you use them properly, you can really improve speed and rate of force development. Sometimes what I'll do is when I'm doing jump training for explosive power, I will anchor a band behind me and then wrap it around my waist, and I'll jump, and having that accommodating resistance is phenomenal. So there's great ways to use it for mobility, for strength, for speed, explosive power. There are many ways to use it, but again, and not to beat a dead horse, but it's just one tool in a toolbox.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Let's see. Susan, how do you feel about cleanses? Cleanses,
I
detoxes.
I wish they'd go away, you know? It's so funny. I've never done a cleanse, but I distinctly remember going on, we were on a cruise. Gosh, I think, and it was on a, it was a Disney cruise because Mike was younger. So we were on a Disney cruise.
Oh, the whole family, you, Mike, Tim?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I headed over to the gym. And of course, they wanted to sell you. You know, I got some personal training days while I was there. I wanted to see what they do, whatever. And so while he's taking me through whatever it was, there's always this thing, well, we've got this cleanse for you, this juice cleanse. And I, you know, and it was trying to list all these benefits of it. And, you know, back, this was a long time ago, and I really didn't understand all of that then. He made it sound super appealing.
Yeah.
Right? It's marketing 101. He took the course. He knew what he was doing. Right? Yep. And I was really close. I remember being really close. Man, this just sounds great.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't spend the money on it. But it's that kind of thing that I think people get sucked into.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They make it sound convincing. They make it sound even borderline delicious and how good you're going to feel and all of this. And there's nothing to back this up. This is what I don't understand.
There's no science behind
it. No, there's absolutely none. And then people wonder why they struggle. They're not getting results. They don't feel any better. They're just hungry, well, and rightly so. It's a marketing thing.
Yeah.
It's total marketing. So, yeah, it's just stay away from it. The thing is, most people know what to do.
Yeah.
They don't want to do it.
Yep.
And they want the easy route out. Right?
Yep.
And this looks like that's it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You know? Man, it sounds great. I want to lose X number of pounds in a week, man.
Yeah.
I really want to do that. Well, that may sound okay, but what are you going to do to maintain that? You know, you have no idea. You didn't learn a thing. You just drank something, ate nothing, was miserable, couldn't do anything because you felt miserable, and now you've lost the weight on the scale. The scale says what it said it was going to say, but now what?
Yeah.
You know?
Now you gain it all back because you start eating normally.
Yeah.
The thing with cleanses is, at best, they're a waste of money. At worst, they're incredibly dangerous.
Sure.
And what's important to remember here is, like, even in the name, a cleanse or a detox, it's not just implying, it is saying, it's telling you that you are cleansing or detoxing your body, and that's part of the marketing. The marketing is based around, you need to cleanse your body of bad toxins, of dangerous toxins.
You have a poison.
You have something inside of you.
Yeah.
And they make you believe that if you don't take this, then these toxins and poisons that are building up in your body are going to kill you.
Yeah.
And the waste of money side of this, the at best scenario, is that they're fucking wrong. And the easiest way to stump anybody, if you ever want to stump someone who's selling you a detox or a cleanse and they say, yeah, you got to get rid of the toxins, just ask them this one question. It stumps them immediately. All you have to ask is, say, which toxins is it getting rid of? And they'll be like, it's all the toxins. And we'll just ask them to name one. Just, what is the name of the toxin? If they're selling you this super expensive cleanse or detox on the basis of eliminating the toxins in your body, they better be able to tell you which fucking toxin it is. And I promise you they won't, because there is no science behind this. It is pseudoscience nonsense. So ask them which toxin. They're like, well, I don't know. So why am I buying this from you if you don't even know which toxins it's going to take out? The at worst scenario, the dangerous scenario, and this is what I've seen, and it makes me sick, is there are people who are sick with cancers or with certain diseases or illnesses, and they're being sold on cleanses and detoxes to fix or cure their problems. Mm. And they're abstaining from legitimate medical procedures that could save their life to opt for these cleanses or detoxes because someone is selling them on it, and then they die. And I actually just had, I spoke with Danielle Ballamard. By the time this podcast with you and I is published, that podcast will already have been published. Danielle told a story of a guy who had colon cancer, and he was seeing this holistic doctor who was giving him all this like nonsense, and never actually diagnosed the colon cancer. And as a result of that, stage 4 colon cancer now, and it could have been diagnosed years prior, but they kept giving them cleanses and detox bullshit. It's like, this is real and this is happening. And that's why it can be dangerous. And I think people are like, well, is it dangerous? Yeah, it can be, especially if people are believing that they have these toxins in their body. When you have to remember, that's what your liver and your kidneys and your skin, like that's what your body is designed to do. It's designed to cleanse your body. It's designed to detox your body. If let's say you've got a liver problem, right? And someone's like, well, so someone once said to me, they're like, you don't think someone with a liver problem should use a detox or a cleanse? And I said, and I made this into an Instagram post years ago and people thought it was hilarious. I was like, if someone has a liver problem, they should go to a fucking doctor and not buy a cleanse from some schmuck on Instagram.
Yeah.
If you've got a liver problem, you don't buy a cleanse from someone, you go to the doctor.
Amen.
That's what your liver and your kidneys are designed to do. They're designed to help clean your body out. You don't need a cleanse or a detox. It doesn't work. It's a waste of money. It's bullshit.
And it's free. Your liver and kidneys kind of are free.
Yeah, you know, thank God.
They don't charge you a dime to do that. So
it's exactly right. All right, let's see. Okay, Susan, is there something extra that women in menopause should do to fight the tummy bulge? And I wouldn't answer this question if you weren't here. So yeah. I'm opting you for this one.
God bless this person. I feel you. I mean, we've all been there. And, you know, the short answer is no. There's nothing extra that you need to do. But I would look at it as maybe doing everything more consistently. Making sure your nutrition is in check. Track your food. If you're not weighing your food, let's start with simple things like that. Yes, tracking calories is going to be very important. Weighing your food is going to be very important. Being consistent with that, not trying it for 3 days and say the scale went up. What? It's not working. You know, I've seen so many people panic and with this exact scenario. They're frightened, and I get it because it feels like this stomach has appeared overnight. And it feels like it's out of control.
Yeah.
It feels that way. And that is a genuine feeling. So I do understand that. But the problem is people will try calorie counting or whatever for a few days. And the scale maybe even went up. You know, a random fluctuation, whatever. And see, it's not working. And then they just quit because of their panic from this. It's still not working. Like it's not. It's still happening. Like I gained a pound of fat overnight. You know. We logically know that that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think somewhere deep down inside our head, we logically know this belly didn't come in a day, you know, or whatever. It didn't suddenly appear, even though I thought it did too.
Yeah.
It didn't. It came after decades of us going in different directions and not keeping track of things.
Yeah.
And being less active. That's how it came. And then you merge that with hormonal changes and boom, you have the perfect storm.
Yeah.
That being said, it doesn't mean that you can't change that. You just need to be honestly aware of what you're consuming and be consistent with that. That's where it starts. I mean, it has to start there. And add in some strength training because, my God, we all need to do that as we get older. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you hate it. Find a way to do it 2 times a week.
Yep.
And then move every single day somehow. Find something that you love to do that you will do every single day. That is your formula. You know, it's really that basic.
Mic drop. Let's drink wine to that. I love that.
Cheers.
You got to finish that wine. Right. Yeah. Perfect. I love that. Okay. All right. So I got another question. This is not fitness related.
Okay.
This person has asked me this on my Q&A, every single Q&A for at least the last like 5 to 10 Q&As. And I haven't answered. And I figured, you know what? Let's do it right now. So this woman wrote, is it okay for my boyfriend to keep liking pictures and following girls that he has tried dating in the past? Should we break up?
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
This is a difficult one. It's one of the reasons that I hate social media.
Yeah.
Because it's like it's an easier way to keep tabs on someone. But on the other hand, I don't necessarily like that he's doing that. So.
No, I mean, I don't either. And I guess it's where are you in this feeling secure with a relationship and communicating about that.
Yep.
I feel like it comes back to that. Not saying anything or you know, rolling the eyes or giving him a negative cold shoulder or something like that. That's not going to that's not good.
Yeah.
You need to talk about it.
Yep.
And then be prepared to tell him what does make you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Or what does, you know, I mean, be specific, because the one thing I've learned is that guys won't read your mind.
No.
They won't.
No, he won't.
So the more that you, even though you assume everyone should be thinking like this, they're not going to think like that.
Correct.
Mean, guarantee. So save yourself a lot of trouble. Open lines of communication. I mean, you have to, because I wouldn't like that either, probably. But it would be good to communicate about it and see if there's more to the story that might make it sound, feel different, whatever. But communication, it's got to be there.
Yeah.
And no, don't break. I mean, my God, if you're ready to break up without even talking to somebody, that's a whole different, that's a whole different problem.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, I mean, to go off of that, like, if you're ready to break up just already, then
That's a red flag. That's like a red flag.
Might not be the right person to be with if you're already ready to break up.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. Like, in this situation, you've got to bring it up. You have to have a conversation about it. And so I remember I had an ex-girlfriend where she would always talk about her exes constantly. It was like a constant, and it wasn't like bad talking. It was like, it was in an endearing way. Like, oh, he was so great. Like, and it was a constant discussion. And I had never experienced that before. And my buddy Adam Pine, he was so funny about it. My buddy, I need to bring Adam on the podcast. He's great. He's like deadlifted about 800 pounds. He's a beast, super funny, nice guy. I remember at that time I was asking, I was like, Adam, is this normal? Like, she just keeps talking about her exes all the time. He's like, bro, that's not normal at all. Like, I never bring up my exes to my current girlfriend. Like, I don't. And so I brought it up to her and I was like, hey, I just want to let you know, like, it's weird to me that you keep talking about them so much. I would rather if you just didn't. And she took offense to that and she didn't like that. And she was like, I don't see why I can't do it. So then we ended up breaking up. And so this is where I think that to go back to this question where you should bring it up to him. And I am a huge believer that if it's important to you and it's within reason, your partner will listen and accommodate you.
Mm-hmm.
So in my scenario with my ex, if she was right for me, she would have said, I won't bring them up anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been it. End of story. But she wasn't right for me. And I wasn't right for her, because whoever she's with, she needs someone who's okay with her talking about her exes all the time.
Yeah.
So it's fine. But like with my wife now, like if we have a problem, we bring it up and we say it and we accommodate. If it's something that we don't think is reasonable, then we'll have a discussion around that. And then you have to decide, is this worth it or not?
Mm-hmm.
For me, if I saw my wife liking all these pictures of guys that she used to date or tried to date, like, I would feel very uncomfortable with that. And I would talk to her about it. And I guarantee you, she would be like, I'm so sorry. I had no idea that it was bothering you.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking about it that way. And she would stop.
Yeah.
And that would be it. So that's where, like, if they're not willing to accommodate you, then it's probably not the right person for you. But you have to remember there is a give and take. And it's not like everything that you want is not always right. So there's a limit to that. Like, there's just because you want it doesn't mean it's always what's right or what's best or what's reasonable. So in this situation, I think it's reasonable to not be doing that. But also, are you going in his phone? Are you checking that? Like, there used to be an option on Instagram that, like, you could actually see, there's a whole feed showing you what people were liking and interacting with. That feed is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So are you going to their pages? Are you seeking this out? Because, frankly, that speaks a little bit towards your insecurity and an issue on your end.
Yes.
So if you're seeking this stuff out just to catch him in the act, that's not good either.
That's a different scenario.
That's a different scenario.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to discuss there.
Oh, yeah.
But it's got to start with a conversation with you two.
It has to.
Yeah.
It absolutely has to.
Okay, so this is a really good question. I like this one a lot. This person wrote, he said, my head hates not being lean. Or, I'm sorry. He said, my head hates being not lean, but my body loves the energy and feeling I get from it. Do you feel that way?
Interesting.
It was a great question. Basically asking, like, listen, in my mind, I want to be lean. I want to be shredded.
Yeah.
But my body feels so much better when I have a little bit more body fat on. Do you feel the same? So do you feel that way, Susan?
Interesting question, because I feel like I've been in this scenario.
Yeah.
Remember, not when we first started working together, but after a couple of years where I just got so lean.
Yeah.
Like really lean. And I thought that was what I wanted, right?
Yep.
Until I didn't. And,
yep.
And for a lot of reasons. So, yeah, I went into that muscle building phase, put on some weight and put on some muscle, and I never went back into a deficit. So I'm carrying more body fat now. Do I struggle with that at times from a mindset perspective? Yeah, I kind of do. So I kind of relate to that struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like there are times. But I also know that I feel so much better now that that is, as every day goes by, I feel like I am feeling much more at ease with this now.
Yeah.
And less like, oh, you know, you're getting a little, yeah, I'm thicker in the middle than I was.
Yeah.
And sometimes, and you females out there, you understand that little lower pooch that makes an appearance, you know, that can get on my nerves. That can get under my last nerve. But what's different now is that I don't allow that emotion now to send me into a tailspin into, okay, I need to now, I have to cut out this. I have to cut out that. I don't go down that road anymore. You know, I'm like, you know what? It's here. Do I like it? No, it is what it is. I like how I feel better now, but this was a process.
Yeah.
You know, I think it takes time to get there.
Yeah, you're right. It's a process.
Yeah.
It is a process. And to answer the question, like, yes, I definitely feel the same way. You know, there are times I look in the mirror and I know I feel better at 150 pounds. I feel great here. But like, I look in the mirror and I'm like, shit, like, I would like to be shredded. I would like to have a lower body fat percentage, but I know that I'll feel worse there. And I think by the process, what we mean by that is like there have been times where I've cut down to 135, 140 pounds because I know I'm way leaner there and I look way more aesthetically pleasing, we'll call it. I have a way lower body fat percentage. I'm much more defined. And I like how I look there better, but I like how I feel better and my overall lifestyle better with a slightly higher body fat percentage at 150 pounds. So
the lifestyle thing.
Yes.
That is so important.
And that's where you have to weigh the pros and cons and decide which one is most important to you.
Yeah.
And I'm at a point in my life where it's just not important to me anymore to sacrifice my lifestyle in order to have a lower body fat.
Yeah.
When I was younger, it made sense.
Yeah.
Mainly realistically out of insecurity. If we're being honest, it was out of ego and insecurity so that I could post a picture on social media, get a lot of likes or people telling me how good I look, whatever it is, or go to a party and be, oh, you're so, whatever. Like, it was all ego and insecurity. And that's why I was willing to sacrifice my lifestyle for my ego.
Yeah.
And now I'm not willing to do that. And now I'm much more aware of my ego and the problems that come with that. And prioritizing my ego as opposed to my lifestyle.
Yeah.
So for me now, it's a no-brainer. But I still struggle with it.
Yeah, I think we're human.
We're human. I still at times look in the mirror. I'm like, I would like to... I still have a little bit more chub than I'd like to on my stomach. But like, I got that like soft belly, right? Mm-hmm. A little soft belly. But like, then I'm like, you know what? I'm okay with it because I would rather be able to go out with you and my wife and eat like we did last night and enjoy it and maintain this. Then imagine if last night... I was like, no, I'm not going to have any of the key lime pie.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have a Bellini. I'm not going to have a key lime pie. Like, that would sort of suck.
That would not be good.
That wouldn't be as fun.
I just feel like, for me too, especially at this stage of my life, I don't see why I would do that anymore.
Yeah.
Like, why would I put myself through that? I think I said on someone's podcast once, I don't think I'll ever see myself going into a deficit again.
Yeah.
Period. Goodbye.
I love that.
I can't see a reason for me to do it. But that nagging pull of, you know, you looked like da 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 da, you know, that doesn't go away.
Still there.
But I think you manage it better.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you see the benefits of in the gym. Like I think I told you this not that long ago. I thought I'd lost all this strength. Like I'm like, and you know, I look back, no, I really have not.
Yeah.
Actually gained something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So isn't that weird? Our mind
just
does crazy things to
us. It does.
And then we allow emotion to get involved and you know, then it's all over. But it's like, yeah, I can't remember the last time in my life other than maybe the recent 4 or 5 years, let's say. Even going back to when we first started, but even more recent times, that I have felt so comfortable going out like we did last night.
Yeah.
And not having to look at just one part of a menu.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'll get whatever the hell I want. You know, that gives me chills because I really haven't put that together until recently.
Like, yeah, it's
when's
amazing.
The last time I've actually done that and felt comfortable at that for a long time?
Yeah.
You know, and that is what's important.
I love that. Yeah, you know? Agreed. Yeah, I agree completely. It's it's a great question.
Yeah.
It's very thought-provoking. And, you know, it's funny, even like for the last couple of years that I've been doing jujitsu competitions, for the first times I cut weight. In my mind, there were times where I was like, oh, I'll just maintain this lower weight once I cut to this weight class. And for the first couple of weeks, I was fine. But eventually, I was like, fuck this. Like,
yeah.
It's only 10 pounds, but it's that last 10 pounds.
Here we go.
Where it's like, it's so hard.
Yes.
And it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
It just isn't. If I was a world-class jiu-jitsu competitor, it would be worth it.
Yeah.
If my income was dependent on me being that weight class,
yeah.
It would be worth it.
Yeah.
For at least in my competitive career. Nope.
No.
Like, I like being able to have wine with you at 2 p.m. yeah. while we're doing a podcast. And, I enjoy that. It's fun. And we're still very healthy. We still move every day.
Yeah.
We work out. Like, slightly higher body fat, but still very healthy, right?
Yeah.
So it really comes down to what are your priorities and what's worth it to you at this point in your life.
Yeah. And just one last word on this. For all the females out there, I feel like we get caught up in the belly stuff a lot. That kind of drives us emotionally. And it's one of these things that the sacrifice that you have to make sometimes to lose the last however many pounds in your head that you want to lose is often not going to be what you think it's going to be, especially when you get there. Not only that, but the sacrifice, the things that you might miss out on that you won't be able to participate in, you know, and as you get older, you want fewer and fewer of those.
Yep.
You want to be able to soak up every last thing, everything.
Yeah.
Everything, you know, and not take any of it for granted, you know. So I think that far outweighs the
agreed.
Pooch or whatever.
Yeah. All right. So here's a good question. And I figured I'd ask you this. What are the best exercises for women to tone their arms? I love the questions like separated by gender.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, gender and age. Those are the two that always get asked. I'm a 50-year-old female and I want to blah, blah, blah. You know, gender, age, none of that is relevant. We need to get those out of things. I mean, gender could be relevant depending on the topic, but for the most part, for something
for
like
this. For toning
arms. For toning arms, you know. And we can talk about exercises for sure, but nutrition's got to be part of this conversation at some point, because I don't know if you're coming from a place of, I've got, you know, flabby arms.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So then maybe nutrition needs to be part of that discussion. And it does. But what I find interesting, because I get the arm question a lot,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You don't program very much arms for me. I mean,
no.
Really. I once in a while, oh, look, here's a bicep thing. Okay, cool. I haven't had that in like 5 months or something. People are shocked by that.
Yeah.
Because they think I have a lot of definition in my arms.
Yeah, well,
so
you
they
do.
Must, I have an arm day.
Yeah.
I've never done an arm day. I have no desire to do an arm day.
Yeah.
I feel like your arms are used in every exercise that you do.
Everything.
Every single one. Now, to that point, you want to focus on building some biceps or something like that. If you want to tone, then you need to build some muscle. That's first and foremost, right? And so, yeah, you can add some arm-specific exercise to your overall, your overall training program. Yeah.
But
you know?
How much weight do you row? Do you dumbbell row?
I'm at 80 pounds right now.
You don't row 80 pounds with weak arms?
No.
Right, it's a back exercise, but you use your biceps.
Yeah.
Oh. Your biceps are a huge part of it.
Yeah.
Like, it's a back exercise, you use your biceps. Like
chin-ups.
Chin-ups. Back exercise, you use your biceps a lot. That's one of the reasons why I prefer chin-ups over pull-ups. You use more bicep.
Yeah.
Push-ups.
Yeah.
Bench press, you use your triceps.
Yeah.
It's shoulders, triceps, all that. It's not just pecs.
Yeah.
So these big compound movements, they require your arms. They require, and yes, having one or two isolation exercises is great for sure, but you don't need an entire day for it.
No.
And it's funny, the reason I wait for certain questions to ask with you, because if someone asked me this question, which they did, they had like, Jordan, what are the best exercises for women to tone their arms? Many people would be like, well, you're a guy.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make what I'm saying less accurate. And it's different if it comes out of my mouth versus your mouth.
And this pisses me off as much as anything else right now, because I feel like while I understand people say, well, you know, you're my age bracket, you understand. Well, yeah, okay, there's truth to that. But that doesn't mean that someone like you can't.
Correct.
And yeah, it doesn't mean that you don't know what to do for someone like me.
Correct.
Right? I'm a living example of this.
Yeah.
Because you've worked with me.
Yeah.
You are the catalyst for all my change. So when that comes up, I get really irritated because I said, you are now just putting this sweeping generalization
yes.
out there, which is unfortunately not true
correct.
In all cases.
Yeah.
You know, and you're missing out as a result.
You're missing out because you're judging someone based on their age
yes.
or their gender
yes.
or their skin color.
Yes.
And you're saying, well, you can't know or your advice isn't good just because you're not the same as me.
You know, it's just like, because you haven't done menopause, it doesn't yeah. mean that you can't help somebody
correct.
Who's going through it.
That line of logic is so flawed because people are like, well, you haven't gone through menopause or you don't have a period. I'm like, all right, well, if you have cancer, are you only going to go to a doctor who's also had cancer?
Yeah.
It's like, just because they didn't have it doesn't mean they haven't studied it and
yeah.
they don't understand how to help with it. It's a very flawed logic to only go with someone.
I do understand a relatability factor to a degree.
Oh, absolutely.
For some things.
Absolutely.
You know, I think there is that. So I don't want to discount that entirely. But just to make sure that people don't miss out on potential amazing help that's out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, 100%. The relatability factor is huge, especially on social media.
Mm-hmm.
When you find someone who has gone through similar life circumstances, you feel an immediate connection.
Mm-hmm.
But the point that you bring up that I really like is not to discount someone just because they aren't the same as you or
yeah.
so similar to you. And I think oftentimes we can learn the most from people who are different than
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
Speak different languages,
mm-hmm.
different religions, different cultures. Like, that's who you can learn the most from.
100%.
Okay, let's see. Someone wrote, I'm bored of lifting weights. I want to try different exercise types, but I also want to maintain my muscle. How can I do that?
You know,
it's a good question.
I mean, and it is, and it's not surprising in the day and age that we live in.
Yeah.
You know, the instant gratification kind of thing that maybe you don't get all the time with strength training from the I think we talked about this earlier about if you go to a boot camp, for instance, how you feel after that is going to be very different than
yeah.
how you feel. So it's kind of a feedback. It may not be accurate feedback, but it is a feedback, right? And so we look for something like that. And I think that's where boredom sets in.
Yep.
I also feel like boredom sets in when people aren't doing things appropriately. Like they're rushing through their reps. We talked about when to increase weight. I think
yep.
I'm on my podcast, you know, they're doing 3 sets of 10 with the same dumbbell for like a year. Yeah,
yeah.
I'd be pretty bored of that too, you know, where maybe if you rewind the clock a year ago, that after that first set, you should have increased weight. Now it's not so boring anymore.
Yep.
Because you can't hardly hold the thing, you know? So, I mean, I feel like that's part of it, that it's not being implemented correctly.
Yep.
But there is going to be a sense of routine there.
Yes.
There yeah. has to be, because otherwise how do you judge your progress when you keep jumping from things to things? That being said, keeping strength training, it's not a reason to ditch it, but it could be a reason for you to start looking at some other things to add to it.
Yeah.
You know, things that you enjoy.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, Zumba, Orange Theory, you want to go for a run, you want to ride a bike, whatever it is, find those things and supplement,
yeah.
you know, add to it. I think that's the combo.
Yeah.
But understand that maybe you need someone to help you in the gym, you know, and make sure you're doing what you need to do and you're getting out of it what you want to get out of it, and then go do all the other things that you love to do.
Yeah. The cool part about this question is that maintaining muscle is very easy compared to
yeah.
building muscle.
Yeah.
And it's very freeing and liberating, especially for me in my situation where I do jiu-jitsu 5 or 6 times a week. And I strength train about 3 times a week. I used to strength train 4, 5, 6 times a week. And now I'm not only maintaining my strength, but I'm getting stronger training 3 times a week. So the general rule of thumb with maintaining muscle is doing about 1/3 of your total volume and intensity is enough to maintain. So if you were training 3 days a week and you were getting stronger, you could literally train 1 day a week.
Mm.
And still maintain.
You won't build.
You won't build.
Right.
But you will maintain.
Yeah.
Maintain. So if you were training 4 times a week, you could train like 2 times a week and you'll easily maintain that muscle.
Mm-hmm.
No problem at all. and strength. Again, you won't build, but you will maintain it. So if you want to do something else, you want to do rock climbing, you want to do rollerblading, you want to do skateboarding, you want to do swimming, you want to do snorkeling, you want to do jiu-jitsu, you want to do dance, whatever it is, whatever else you want to do outside of lifting weights, just make sure you lift 1 to 2 days a week and you'll maintain your strength. Yeah. It's really, the amount it takes to maintain is so minute. It's actually pretty crazy.
That's, I mean, and that should be welcome news for someone like this who wants to maybe explore other exercise options.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
That's great news.
Okay, so here's a good question. Does gaining 1 to 2 kilograms or 2 to 4 pounds make chin-ups or pull-ups harder?
I think adding any weight is going to make them harder.
Yes.
You know, I mean, whether you could put that 5 pound, like I add weight by putting a plate on my back. I strap it to a band and put it on my back. Yeah, the 5 pound plate on my back makes chin-ups harder than if I didn't have the 5 pound plate on my back. So yeah, so whether that's weight that you've gained or you're putting that weight on your back, it's still extra weight.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it is going to be harder.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why I really like chin-ups as having a performance-based goal, because as you lose weight, it gets easier.
Yeah.
And if someone wants to lose weight, but you know, maybe they don't like the scale or whatever it is, having chin-ups be a goal will help them get their nutrition in check, because they lose if you lose 5 pounds, you'll fly up.
Yeah.
It'll be, if I lost 5 pounds right now, I could probably do an extra 5 to 7 chin-ups.
Yeah.
Just without getting stronger, I could probably do an extra 5 to 7 chin-ups without having that extra weight on.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you gain weight, it's going to be harder.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's just going to get, that's why, you know, when you want to take chin-ups to the next level, you add weight.
Yep.
Right? And it gets amazingly hard. You're not going to be able to do the same reps. Like I never could. If I put 10 pounds on my back, I can't do the same number of reps.
Yeah.
With 10 pounds on my back that I could without, you know, and God, no, not with the 45 pounds, you know, I mean, it's like I got one.
Which is insane.
What?
Because when you first started, you couldn't do any chin-ups.
I couldn't do any chin-ups, right.
And now you're doing chin-ups with 45 pounds wrapped around your waist.
I was, but I'm knocking on the door again.
Yeah, so, you've had shoulder issues and stuff, but.
Yeah, yeah. So the more weight, it's going to be harder.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right, Susan. That was it. Do you want to tell everyone where they can follow you again?
Yeah. Susan Ebergall Fitness, really just about everywhere. It's Instagram primarily, Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast, and my book, Fit at Any Age, is Never Too Late.
I love it. And thank you, everyone, for listening. If you'd like to join the Inner Circle, you can do that at the link in the show notes, www.sfinnercircle.com. To everyone who's already in the Inner Circle, we love you.
We love you.
We love you so much. And if you'd like to pre-order my book, Eat It, you can do that also at the link in the show notes. So have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you soon.